MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network.
Available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm co-host Bobby Sylvester with Mike Tagliere, and this is the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. We've got guest Scott Barrett of Pro Football Focus joining us today to talk about news of the week, play Name That Player, and we'll touch on his football sabermetrics metric and finish with some hot takes. Scott, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for being on. What's going on, guys?
Scott, I am happy to have you on, man. You know, Scott and I have been kind of side by side for a long time in the industry. We both were hired by PFF together, and then we went on, and it's just like over the last 2 months, Scott and I have both landed full-time jobs. Like me, I've landed with Fantasy Pros, and Scott is hired full-time with Pro Football Focus. So first off, I want to congratulate Scott for a full-time job in the industry. That's it's a difficult thing to land. And, you know, Scott, you're extremely deserving, man. Like, if you guys don't follow Scott on Twitter, he's always putting out some sort of chart, some sort of stat that all of us nerds that can't get enough stats, we love him. And Scott is going to talk about some of that stuff on the show today. So I'm extremely excited to talk to Scott. He's a friend. We did a podcast actually last year together for a little bit of the year. So Scott and I are pretty familiar with each other, and I'm pretty excited to have him on.
Yeah, I have to admit, I came across Scott on Twitter like 2 weeks ago, and I was thrilled. I was telling Scott this before the show because I felt bad about it, but like, you know, I didn't know until he got the full-time gig. He puts out awesome stuff. He's a great Twitter follow. Scott, where they can find you on Twitter?
At Scott Barrett DFB.
Stands for Dude Fantasy Bro.
That's right. That was my original handle, and then I had like 800 followers. I'm like, oh, why isn't anyone following me? And then I just changed it, and within like 2 months, I got like 6,000 followers.
Yeah, yeah, I remember the rise up, dude. Because like I said, you and I have had a lot in common in our kind of career path so far. And like I said, it's just kind of culminated to where we are now, and we're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about your actual opportunity series that you're doing for PFF. But Bobby, I want you to tell everybody about the contest we're doing before we get into some news and notes.
Yeah, so we've been telling you guys about pristineauction.com. and how we got this signed Le'Veon Bell jersey to give away. Time's running out to get your free entry into the sweepstakes. It's really simple. And if you don't take 20 seconds to do this, I'm just not going to believe that you like free stuff. So go to iTunes, subscribe and review our show, screenshot it, and send it to us at contest@fantasypros.com. That's it. And you can win the signed Le'Veon Bell jersey if you're the lucky guy or gal. Details of this contest can be found on our Fantasy Pros Twitter handle in the pinned tweet. And Tags, why don't you go ahead and tell us about Pristine Auction?
Yeah, so it's pristineauction.com. That's P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E auction.com. This is a site that I've used before they were a sponsor of the show. Like, they have items from every single NFL team. You can go there and find helmets. You can find jerseys. You could find plaques. Anything that you want. It's like perfect for a Father's Day gift. If you're looking for something for your dad, if you know they're a fan, go there. And all we ask that you do is when you go, they ask you, how did you hear about us? Tell them that Fantasy Pros sent you. And that's that way we're able to keep doing, you know, the things that we're doing with the Le'Veon Bell signed jersey right now. Everything on the site is guaranteed authentic. They only work with the most trusted sources. It's free. You never have to pay to bid on an item. Think of it like an eBay. You just go on there and you bid on it. You only pay when you win, and that's it. All we ask, again, is that you let them know that we sent you when you go there. And then go leave that review. Try and win the Le'Veon Bell jersey. And then if you don't win that, go and bid on something else. I know earlier I was taking a look on there at some neat things. And I need to stop because I have purchased six autographed helmets in the past 2 months. And my wife is kind of getting on my back saying that I need to chill out a little bit. But again, it's more affordable than you would think, guys. Go check it out. PristineAuction.com.
I bet your office looks really cool now, though.
It is. I actually...
She's probably just jealous of your office.
No, my wife, she really... Like, she's the one who actually usually buys things for me. But when I get into, like, a hobby, like, I start and I don't stop until I collect everything. And my goal is to collect one from every NFL team, a helmet from every team, and have it signed by either a Hall of Famer or their best player right now. And one of the helmets I got for cheaper than I thought on PristineAuction.com was a Sammy Watkins Bills helmet. And I'm like... And now I'm looking at it and saying, I don't know if Sammy Watkins is going to be on the Bills next year.
Ooh, just wait for our hot takes. Just wait for it, baby.
Oh, God, you better say that Sammy Watkins is going to be good. That's all I got to say, Bobby.
We'll see. Well, you guys will have to wait.
Mike, do you think you could make 32 helmets of just McCown brother teams?
We might be able to. I mean, I can get a McCown Jets helmet because I'm having trouble trying to decide on who I'm going to get a Jets helmet of. So maybe Josh McCown.
Tim Tebow is the obvious choice.
Tim Tebow.
IK and Impali.
I could, yes. That's no. I mean, he might break my jaw and take the helmet from me if I buy it. But this show is already seemingly off the rails, but we're going to even put it further off the rails, Bobby. I know we want to talk about the news and notes, and the biggest news of the weekend is that Jeremy Maclin was cut by the Kansas City Chiefs. Scott, what is your take on this? He's being recruited by the Bills right now. Apparently, that seems like it's very, very likely going to happen. What does this do for Macklin's value? What does this do for Tyrod Taylor's value? What does it do to the Bills wide receivers in general?
As for Jeremy Macklin's value, I'm not really sure. It's never a good thing when you're cut, and he's probably going to end up somewhere where he's the third, hopefully second best target option on the team. If he's on the Bills, yeah, it bumps Zay Jones down a little bit. Probably doesn't affect,
I hate that,
Sammy Watkins too much. Yeah, I was excited about Zay for sure. As for Tyreek, I think this is awesome news. He was a guy I was kind of low on just relative to, you know, volume expectations. But, you know, prior to last season, during his time with Kansas City, Andy Reid's wide receiver one has averaged 6.9 targets per game. Tyreek only averaged 5.1 last season. We saw how productive he was and efficient he was on minimal usage. So you have to be excited about his prospects and bumping him up a little bit in your rankings.
Yeah. So I don't know if you're with me, Bobby. I don't know where your take's on this. So a lot of people got excited about Tyreek Hill after this. But my thing is, like, does this really affect Tyreek Hill that much?
No.
Like, is he?
I don't think it does at all.
Yeah, I don't think he's a prototypical number one wide receiver. I don't think anybody's claiming for him to be that. Jeremy Maclin was playing the slot a little bit more last year. I want to say that, like, 40% of his snaps were out of the slot. So I don't know if I can raise Tyreek's ceiling any more than I can. I still think that he's going to be a very volatile fantasy player. Sure. in a Chiefs offense that struggles to throw the ball 500 times a year.
I think he's kind of capped on where his targets can be. I saw Anthony Amico on Twitter talking about how Cordell Patterson was even better his rookie year than Tyreek Hill, and everyone was talking about, you know, he's got no one to compete with. He's got a 31-year-old Brandon Marshall, and that's it. And we all know what happened to Cordell Patterson, so... I'm not that psyched about Tyreek Hill. I have him quite a bit lower than everyone else. And this news does not change anything for me. The person it does change things for, I mean, obviously Zay Jones. Look, I'm a Zay Jones owner in our Dynasty Expert League that we just did. And I am so bummed right now. Like, I'm really, really hoping he doesn't sign with them, but I think he's going to. But the person this really changes me on is J.U. Chesson, that rookie that the Chiefs traded up for in the fourth to go get. I think he's going to be the real deal, and I think it's going to happen his rookie year.
I don't know if it's going to happen his rookie year. As you've seen, like Chris Conley, he was someone that was really projected. He's like a love of those metric guys. And I'm sure Scott knows a lot more about Chris Conley's metrics than I do. But Chris Conley is someone that they've kind of like coddled along. They haven't really thrown him into the fire. We don't know if Albert Wilson is going to end up seeing more targets than Chesson, than Chris Conley. You know what I mean? I don't really know where to go with this Chiefs offense because it seems like they're very hesitant on using those rookie wide receivers, you know, throwing into the fire right away. And let's be honest, how many fantasy relevant players can a Chiefs offense give you? You know, Scott, what does your math tell you? Because I know you're doing this actual opportunity series. What does the math tell you? How many options from the Chiefs can actually be relevant? You know, like we have Travis Kelce, we have Spencer Ware and Kareem Hunt, we have Tyreek Hill. Can somebody else be relevant in this offense?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say any receiving options outside of Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill are really on my radar. With Andy Reid, historically, the position you want to target is you want his starting running back. You want his RB1.
Yeah, and that's where I'm at. I know we could talk about Spencer Ware and Kareem Hunt a different day because I know Scott's a Kareem Hunt fan. I like Spencer Ware. But before we start talking about the topic of our show today, which is we're going to do a hot take episode. So when getting Scott on, I'm like, let's get Scott to give some hot takes, because if there's anything that Scott's good at, it's giving you things that are out there that will maybe shock you and make you think twice, you know, when going through these things, because he often has a lot of these spreadsheets to back up the information he's giving. But before we do that, Scott, I don't know if you know about the game we have on this show. It's called Name That Player. And what we do is we have a guest on. And between you and Bobby, I'm going to give you guys these little hints. They're like, you know, like one sentence, I'm going to give you a hint. And whoever guesses the player first, you get basically a point. We do a best of three. There's going to be three players that we do. And so basically, I'm going to give you these hints and you're going to tell me who I am as soon as you know. Are you guys ready?
Yeah,
I am. And I want you to know, Scott, that last time we did this, it went really well for me because it was a day after I ate artichoke heart pizza. And I just had artichoke heart pizza last night, too. Someone left us a review
Sounds
saying
awful.
That when they heard I ate artichoke heart pizza, it gave us so much more credibility. And they're exactly right. So hopefully I can prove it here again.
Oh, I'm screwed.
Does that not sound awful, Scott, by the way?
I don't even know what artichoke hearts are, so.
It tastes like meat. It's like the only vegetable that tastes like meat.
So then why wouldn't you just put meat on your pizza?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
No answer for that one. All right, guys. Name that player. Here's the first player. I was the only wide receiver to finish in the top 25 despite not seeing a combined 100 targets and or touches.
Oh.
All right. Next hint. I posted 646 yards and 8 touchdowns over the final 8 games of the season. Yet some say I'm not the same.
Taylor Gabriel.
Nope. I've scored 67 touchdowns since 2010, which is 5 more than any other player.
Wow.
I have a brand. It's called Throw Up the X.
This is like the last show where you gave us so many clues and I just couldn't get it until the end.
I am number 88.
What in the world? Is it Dez Bryant?
Yes. Whew. Oh, you guys are slacking
on
this one.
That was horrible.
I thought for sure you guys would get it when I said the 67 touchdowns since 2010.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What in the world? I mean, I'm sitting here like trying to think about people like right on the edge of 20 to 25, and Dez Bryant didn't even cross my mind. So I just had like a blockade in my mind during that.
I was sure he saw 100 targets, but you're right.
Yeah, he was at 95 targets.
Wow.
All right, so no cheating on this going forward, you two.
I feel that shouldn't even count for a point
so
for me. I feel terrible about it.
I'm going to have an additional bonus question. I had this ready in case you guys slacked. But so Bobby's up 1-0 right now.
Okay.
Here's the number two player. Number two, I was the only player to score fewer than 6 touchdowns, but finished top 12 at my position. Now, this is between running back and wide receiver. That's what it's narrowed down to. I was the only player to score fewer than 6 touchdowns, but finished top 12 at my position.
Jarvis Landry?
Nope. I scored just 9 points in the red zone, yet finished as a top 12 wide receiver.
Julio Jones?
Nope. I was third on my team in red zone targets.
Amari Cooper?
You got it. Amari Cooper is the answer. Amari Cooper is the only player to finish top 12 at his position between running back and wide receiver without scoring at least 6 touchdowns.
He crossed my mind, but I thought there's no way he was top 12.
He was.
Like,
he
is this like
number 12.
Super customized scoring or something?
No, it's standard scoring. Get out of here. he was so he was the number 12 wide receiver. I think he was even higher in PPR. But he my last hint was that he's 22 years old. He's still just 22 years old for a couple more weeks. So
is he still your dynasty 101?
I struggle with that, but Amari Cooper is like the only players that I would take over him. Odell Beckham, I would take over him. I would debate Antonio Brown and Julio Jones. I actually think
Michael
I would
Crabtree.
Take Brown and Jones over him, but it's very, very, very close. Like, he's my number 4 receiver, like, clear cut.
Wow, man. I don't know. Dynasty, that makes sense. He's so young, and he's got Carr.
He's going to be so good. So good.
Crabtree's going to outscore him again this year.
No, I'll take a bet on that.
No. So glad to hear
I'm
you
not,
say
I'm
that.
Not
you
doing
can
that,
come
no.
on any show that you want to if you're going to talk trash on Amari Cooper.
So listen, no, real quick. Listen to this. So like the red zone thing, Michael Crabtree's yardage on touchdowns scored last season, from 2 yards out, 2 yards out, 3 yards out, 5 yards out, 13, 13, 21, and 2. And then for Amari Cooper, it's 32 yards out, 34 yards out, 35, 37, and 64.
Yeah, buddy. Whoa. So it's like there's truth to the fact, but the thing is the Raiders haven't used Amari Cooper in the red zone. That's the concern and why it's hard to say that regression, this and that. But even if Amari Cooper was just average on his 15 red zone targets that he got last year, even if he was just average, he would have finished as the number 9 wide receiver. So for me,
that's good.
Amari Cooper, there is room for growth. I have an article coming on him actually this week, so stay tuned for that. But we are tied 1-1 right now. So we have the third and final question, guys. Let's name that player, the last one. I was the number 4 running back through 10 weeks of the season last year, but was the number 27 running back for the remainder of the season.
Matt Fortet.
Nope. I averaged just 3.5 yards per carry over the final 6 games, while my backup averaged 5 yards per carry and scored 3 more touchdowns than I did.
Matt Fortet.
LeSean McCoy.
Nope.
What?
Ooh, that's a good guess, too.
I'm being drafted as a top 8 running back.
Devonta Freeman.
Nope.
Ugh.
I was very bad in Chip Kelly's offense.
Carlos Hatton? Because that's not true.
No, he was really good.
Yeah, exactly. Ryan Matthews.
Nope. Oh, I wear number 29.
Hey, that's not going to help me.
Yeah.
I don't know numbers and stuff, man.
I play for the Titans.
Oh, DeMarco Murray.
Wow, we suck.
Yes.
That was horrible.
If we could get
take
a booing
this whole segment out of the show, it's
so can we get a booing audience, like instead of a cheering one for you guys? Like I'm booing you guys right now. But no, I love this show because
you were trying to trick us, though, man. Those were tricky.
But not well. That's the thing is, like, it needs to be tough. Otherwise, you'd get it on the first one. It's like I think it's very. Yeah. It makes you knowledgeable while listening, and I think it encourages the audience to participate. Because I know me, if I'm in my podcast listening to the show, I would have been like, "Oh, it's DeMarco Murray," because he was awful over the final 6 weeks. while Derrick Henry was really, really good. But that was fun, Scott. I Bobby wins.
Now you guys know terrible secret, and that I'm atrocious on my feed. I'm the least clutch fantasy analyst out there.
But well, it doesn't matter when you have the research that your fingertips that you do.
Yeah,
so
you're right.
Scott, I want you to explain a little bit before we go into our hot takes.
Well, what was the bonus question?
Well, I don't want to give that away because I'm going to use that for a different show. Because I don't want to give that one away. Because like I wanted to make sure.
I just want to redeem myself so bad.
Save it for a better
one. I won, but I just feel dirty.
Well, if your hot takes are actually good takes, then you'll
redeem
yourself. If not, then I'm just going to throw this entire episode for Bobby in the garbage. But so, Scott, I want to give you a second here. Let's talk about your actual opportunity series. You want to give our audience a brief overview of what it actually is and why it should be relevant to the fantasy player.
Yeah, so every time I'm on a podcast and someone asks me to describe it, I feel like I change it up. Like it's completely different every single time. But yeah, just read the article, explain it really succinctly in that. But pretty much it's I'm building out expected fantasy points. So for receivers, I look at each target, at each line of scrimmage, at each depth of target. And then for running backs, I look at each carry on each line of scrimmage, by each down and distance. So what this does is I can look at, on a data sample of 10 years, I can look at every single target that where a quarterback drops back from the 50-yard line and throws it exactly 12 yards through the air. And then on that, I build out expected fantasy points from that sample. So let's say we can expect a receiver to score 1.9 points on that, right? Or 2.3, whatever it is. And then for a carry, it's the same thing. Like a carry on the 1 yard line down a distance, third and one, is worth 3.8 fantasy points. And just build out this expected fantasy points total to give us a player's actual opportunity, the worth of his actual opportunity all last season. And I just compare players based on that. I could also look at efficiency, how many fantasy points he scored over or under expectation. But really, I think the big takeaway is we finally now can determine how valuable a player's role is. Like, who had the better role last year, David Johnson or Le'Veon Bell? That's the huge debate. Now we know. By looking at red zone carries, goal line carries, end zone targets, red zone targets, air yards, all this stuff. And I think it's just like a really good way of, you know, finally measuring something that we've been trying to figure out for a while now.
I also like the implications of how this works from team to team. You can see how teams like to use their running backs. So say that the Oakland Raiders go and get Marshawn Lynch, right? We can see how they like to use their running backs and what Marshawn Lynch's actual opportunities are going to be.
Exactly. So that's going to be the next series I do on it. I already dropped the series, but the next one's going to be breaking it down by team and coaching tendencies.
No, that's awesome. I did an article this off season basically on coaching changes and what it means to fantasy players, and whether it's an offensive coordinator, whether it's a whole new staff, whatever the case is. So I really can appreciate this. I do something similar in spreadsheets, but it's not down to the every single play like Scott's doing. So Scott, what I want to do is I want to get a few players that stood out to you that in your study there. Who are a couple players, like even if you give us just one running back, one wide receiver, who stood out to you as better than you would have thought and who stood out as worse than you would have thought?
So I'll just talk a little bit on running backs, as I think that was the most interesting. Was Le'Veon Bell just had the most valuable fantasy role of the past decade on a per game basis.
Yeah.
And then over the course of a full season, David Johnson had the most valuable fantasy role by any player at any position. So Le'Veon Bell ranked a little bit higher in per game on a per game basis, but really they were both first best and second best of the past decade. And that this is all by PPR, by the way. I know you're a big standard guy, Mike.
Oh, no, I like PPR. We actually, it's funny, we'll have an episode later in the week where we're going to argue with Jake Seeley about it because he tries to tell me that standard is better. And I like PPR. I think it's more predictive.
Yeah, me too. Touchdowns are super random, so it kind of takes that aspect out a little bit. I also like point per first down. I think that's a fun change to that. But yeah, pretty much the takeaway, these guys had this insane role, the most at any position this past decade. A guy who stood out there was Melvin Gordon. He ranked third best. And then a guy who kind of disappointed, I thought, was Ezekiel Elliott. He ranked fifth best. And what happened there was he was kind of hurt a little bit by how efficient he was. He ranked outside the top 10 in carries inside the 5, 10, 20 yard lines per game, but he made up for it by being insanely efficient. He had the most, the highest touchdown rate within the red zone. You know, his yards per carry was fantastic running behind that offensive line. But the big thing that hurt him was just lack of targets. He was the fifth most efficient running back in terms of this metric this past decade. And then since 2006, there have been 46 different instances of a running back posting an average of more than 18.5 fantasy points per game. Elliott was one of only two running backs to do that on fewer than three targets per game. The other was D'Angelo Williams' 20 touchdown season in 2008. So it just shows you how important targets are for running backs in PPR leagues. But I think he makes up for that this year with Lance Dunbar leaving for Los Angeles.
Yeah, it definitely helps because Darren McFadden is not really, I mean, he's basically the clear-cut backup and Alfred Morris is just Alfred Morris at this point. Mm-hmm. I think that Ezekiel Elliott, I just pulled up my spreadsheet while you were talking about it. Ezekiel Elliott is the only running back that I have who scored 3 rushing touchdowns from outside the red zone. So he had 3 touchdowns of longer than 20 yards.
He
is the only one that I have here that did that. So that's obviously pretty neat. So Ezekiel Elliott, but what about like borderline players? Like I'm curious about like the guys like Allen Robinson. I know he had a historically bad season last year, like in terms of efficiency numbers, in that Marquise Lee basically saw less targets but was more productive. At what point, Scott, do we say talent matters, that maybe a player had a down year? Like, do you take any solace in that, or are you stuck on the fact that the efficiency numbers do matter? Because he's had like the both sides of it, right? In his in 2015, he was like the high end of efficiency numbers with his touchdowns. Last year, he was like the low end of efficiency on almost everything. So where do you stand when there's such a divide on a player like Allen Robinson?
So I'm so glad you asked this question. This is awesome. Yeah, I'm totally in the volume is king camp. That's why I came up with actual opportunity, because we realize how important it is, and it's so much stickier than efficiency stats. But actually, something I'm working on that should be dropping next week or the week after. Efficiency is actually kind of underrated at this point. And a lot of guys have done correlation studies on efficiency, but they're looking at it the wrong way. The middle bulk of all efficiency statistics is pretty much irrelevant. What you want to look at is the polar ends. So guys ranking really highly or really lowly in efficiency, those guys, their efficiency numbers are really sticky. And it's also super predictive the next season for projecting volume. And because Allen Robinson was so inefficient last season, that he had one of the bottom 10 worst ever seasons in terms of depth adjusted yards per target. He ranked lowly in drop rate, wide receiver rating, among a few other things. And because he ranks so lowly, you know, of course, 2 years ago, he was very efficient in the red zone, among other things. But because he ranks so lowly, I'm really nervous. I think target volume drops. And there's multiple reasons to think that outside of just the poor efficiency. We see it looks like the team understands that what happened in the passing game last year wasn't working. They went out and drafted a running back number 4 overall. I think they're going to run the ball a lot. And he's a guy who has really subsisted on garbage time production. No wide receiver has scored a higher percentage of their fantasy points when trailing by 7 or more points over the past 3 seasons. Guess what? That defense got better. So, you know, less garbage time production. And then, like you said, Marquise Lee just completely outproduced him. And then just my final point, yeah, Marquise Lee had more yards from scrimmage on, I think, like 30 fewer targets. And so just a final point is, when looking at a presumed wide receiver one, I like seeing production against, you know, elite top cornerbacks. So throughout his career, he has 60 targets against top 20 graded cornerbacks by PFF. And on those 60 targets, he's caught just 20 for 193 yards and 1 touchdown. Among 116 wide receivers over the past decade to see at least 40 such targets, Robinson ranks 2nd worst on a fantasy point per target basis.
Wow. That's tough, man. That's tough to combat. It really is.
Man, you guys are scaring me off on Allen Robinson. I was so pumped about him bouncing back, and now I'm really worried. Scott, I'm wondering how high you'd be willing to take him. Is he still a top 4 round player for you, or does he drop back for you?
He's outside of my top 50, and I got a lot of heat for that when I dropped my rankings. There's no worse player in dynasty leagues right now, in my opinion. His ADP has him as the number 11 overall player. And then in redraft leagues, he's the number 14 wide receiver. I have him well below that. He's a guy, you know, if he's a wide receiver one again next season, that's just a hill I'm going to die on. But I really don't think that's going to be the case. And why am I drafting a guy way closer to his 2015 price tag when we just saw 2016 was abysmal? He finished 34th among wide receivers on a fantasy point per game basis, and he's getting drafted 3 rounds before that. So he's just not a guy I'm excited about.
Yeah, I'm a little shocked in that too. I just wanted to chime in because I'm a little shocked because I had Allen Robinson in a dynasty league that earlier this offseason, I didn't realize that his value wouldn't go down because the trade revolved around me sending away Allen Robinson and me getting in return Amari Cooper. And a lot of people thought I lost the trade because what? I gave up some a little bit more on top of Allen Robinson, but it just goes to show how high people still are on Allen Robinson, how they're gravitating towards his 2015 season. I'm still a fan. Like, I still think the talent's there when I watch him, you know, like Matt Harmon and his reception perception stuff. Allen Robinson is still a phenomenal route runner. And, you know, he had mental errors last year. So I think there's somewhere in between. I think that they need to figure out the quarterback situation before anything. I think that Blake Bortles is to blame. Like, where when you don't see consistent targets over and over and over again, it's hard to get in any sort of a rhythm as a wide receiver. So I think there's a middle ground with Allen Robinson, but I would not draft him in the 2nd round, which is where he's basically going right now. So, yeah, Bobby, where are you at on Allen Robinson right now?
Well, I mean, I drafted him in our expert dynasty league, so but you know, he did drop all the way to 34 at that spot. So I was happy to grab him in that range. With that being said, I wouldn't do it again based on what Scott just told me. You really sold me on this. I mean, he was going, what, 9 or 10 at this point last year? So that's a pretty substantial drop-off. And I didn't have him until 15 or 16. But, I mean, I feel like dropping to 34 is a decent deal on him.
No, yeah, you get a nice little bargain there. The ADP I side him, had him in the first round, yeah. If there's one caveat I could put on this is something that I don't think anyone's talking about really, and they should. Adam Schefter tweeted out in January that Blake Bortles played the season with two shoulder separations and wrist tendonitis. Oh. That's huge. So, you know, like maybe Blake Bortles takes a leap this. He wasn't exactly efficient two seasons ago either, but maybe he does gets healthy, takes a leap, and that helps Robinson. But
he was also a rookie. They were also playing in a bunch of nickel and dime packages because they were behind by so much. They had no running back. I think things are going to go a lot better for Jacksonville's offense. And I hadn't seen that report by Schefter. That makes me quite a bit more confident in some of these Jaguars pieces.
Yeah, that's different. I didn't hear that one on Bortles, but again, he didn't really impress me in 2015 either. It was
so
a lot of garbage time stuff.
He's like a top 20 quarterback now.
Well, yeah. Now he's barely there. All right. So Scott, let's get into the hot takes portion. I'm going to start it off with you. We're each going to give a player like one that we're higher on and one that we're lower, almost like one breakout and one bust. And it could be anything. Like last year, I remember I did something for PFF that was I predicted one of my bold predictions was that Kobe Fleener would outscore Jordan Reed. Another one was that Le'Veon Bell, despite being suspended for the first three games, that would finish as the number one running back. And I was really close to that one. Like Le'Veon Bell didn't disappoint me at all, but Kobe Fleener, I don't even want to talk about it. But Scott, let's talk about some of your hot takes right now. Like who's a player that you predict like to be much better than people think right now?
This guy's kind of getting picked up a little bit, but when I wrote this down in one of my articles, he was going as wide receiver 41 in MFL 10s, which I thought was, you know, ridiculous because I have him like 20 spots higher. And that's Pierre Garçon, who had the second easiest schedule for outside wide receivers this season. Per my data, what I came up with was top five in postseason schedule as well. And really, it just goes back to my love for Kyle Shanahan, who I adore, and I think he's one of the smartest minds in football. And I don't think it's close outside of, you know, guys like Belichick. But so since Kyle Shanahan's first offensive coordinator job, which was 2008, Kyle Shanahan's wide receiver one, that's Andre Johnson twice, Santana Moss, Jabbar Gaffney, Pierre Garçon twice, Andrew Hawkins, and Julio Jones twice. Shanahan's wide receiver one has averaged 16.5 fantasy points per game, which would have ranked ninth best at the position last season. Everyone knows the stat, but last time Garçon played with Kyle Shanahan, he led the league in receptions, ranked 11th in fantasy points, super easy strength of schedule, limited target competition. I have him well above his current ADP, and I'm a big fan of his.
Me too.
Yeah, I'm right there with Garçon. Like he's someone that it was actually lower than wide receiver 41 for a long time, Scott. And like I was shocked at it because I wrote it right after he signed with them. And I think at that time he was the wide receiver 58. And I said it was a joke because I actually think that he's going to finish as a top 30 wide receiver. Now, it's difficult to rank him higher than that just because you don't know the upside at his age in this offense. Like, that's the difficult part is, like, how many scoring opportunities is he going to have? Like, he might end up the year with three or four touchdowns. That doesn't mean he can't finish with 1,000 yards because I think he's a lock for 125 targets. And if you get that many targets, you're almost locked into, you know, top 30 numbers. So I love it. So basically, where are you planning your flag here is the hot take? Are you going to say Pierre Garçon's going to be a top 20? Or like, where are you at with that?
Give me top 15.
Ooh.
Top 15. That is bold. That was almost like me last year with Torrey Smith. And well, that didn't really happen. So
Kevin White.
I live with that take. I live with that take and I'm okay with it. I think that the thought behind it was right.
I'm not going to draft him top 15. Let me get that straight. Yeah.
Oh, no. Right. No. Yeah.
I've got Garçon ranked ahead of Julian Edelman and ahead of Tyreek Hill.
Wow.
So, I mean, I'm with you.
Wow. I mean, I could see, I definitely can see above Julian Edelman. I think people are kind of overestimating Julian Edelman this year and what they're doing. Bobby, what's your hot take? Who's a player that you're higher on?
It's Sammy Watkins. Sammy Watkins is going to finish as the number four wide receiver this year. This is the first time in his entire career we've heard that his foot is healthy. This is the best wide receiver prospect to come out of the draft since Julio Jones. And we haven't seen the best of him yet. I mean, you said it, Tags. In his last 15 games with Tyrod Taylor, 1,284 yards and 10 touchdowns. To give you an idea, Odell had 1,297 and 10 touchdowns in his last 15 games. Watkins is still 23 years old.
It's insane. Sammy Watkins is like, he's a buy-in dynasty right now. And he's someone that I it's funny. I've been working on these profiles, these player profiles, and they're going to be coming out as the weeks lead up to the season too. Like I'm pretty sure I'm going to write up every single player because that's what I do. It's just, I want to talk about these players and why I like them, why I don't. Sammy Watkins is someone that I love. And I love Tyrod Taylor too. I think that's kind of, I don't know how Tyrod Taylor continues to be drafted where he is. Like, he's in ECR right now. I think he's the QB 16 somehow. In MFL 10s, he's like the QB 17. I think it's a joke. I mean, the guy was throwing to Marquise Goodwin, Robert Woods, you know, this in, who else? Walt Powell. Is that who he was throwing to last year? So, and this guy still, on a point per game basis, finished as the number 6 quarterback, I want to say. And yet, the Bills, you know, people want to talk about him possibly being benched and this and that. The Bills are dumb if they really believe that Sammy Watkins and Tyrod Taylor are not the strengths of this offense. Zay Jones, even if Jeremy Maclin signs, it should help detract some attention from Sammy Watkins because he's really been the only show in town for the last couple of years. So I like Sammy Watkins. Scott, where are you at on Watkins? Do you think that this could happen as a number 4 wide receiver?
First of all, amazing Tyrod take. I'm 100% with you. I love Sammy too, but I always reference in my articles when I hype him up that he's a guy I've just been consistently wrong on year over year. And I think I just love him and don't really factor in the injury risk as much as I should. But yeah, I ranked him super high in my rankings. I got kind of a little bit of heat for it. He was surprisingly efficient last season. No one really realizes it, but he ranked top 20 in yards per route run.
He was number 1 2 years ago.
Yeah, and his 2015 season was arguably one of the most efficient seasons ever by a sophomore wide receiver. Adam Harstad wrote a really great piece for PFR on that. And yeah, I mean, we'll see if Jeremy Maclin comes, but there's limited target competition. I think a big thing that a lot of people aren't really factoring in is the exit of Rex Ryan is huge for this offense. Yeah. So the new offensive coordinator, I know you've already done this research, Mike, so apologies for repeating, but Rick Dennison's going to be the new OC. So throughout his career in the league as an offensive coordinator, his teams run the ball 43.3% of the time, which is right around league average, 41.1%. But Rex Ryan's offenses were historically some of the highest, 49.2%. So they should throw the ball a little bit more. And no one's debating Watkins' talent if he's healthy.
That's awesome. I'm excited about him. He's a player that, like, if I take in the third round, I'm excited because he could be a first rounder next year. If he stays healthy on the field for 16 games, I'm pretty sure that I'd be willing to draft him as a top 10 wide receiver.
I'd take 12 games from Sammy Watkins and be thrilled.
Yeah, I mean, if you could do that, that's great. And it's funny because, like, the Sammy Watkins with Tyrod Taylor, the stat that I referenced, it was back a few weeks ago in regards to what you mentioned, Bobby. I actually missed the one game that they benched Tyrod Taylor in week 17 last year, so I subtracted that. The numbers look even better. Like, it's kind of it's insane what him and Tyrod Taylor have done together. So I'm excited to see that kind of take place.
So basically he's better than Odell Beckham.
No, I'm not saying that.
I'm just messing.
No, definitely not saying that. I'm not willing to take away targets from Odell Beckham in order to give Brandon Marshall some. That's just not happening. But my hot take would be that Devin Funchess outscores Kelvin Benjamin. And
wow.
If you were to remove, so I'm gonna try and do my best to give you the reasoning for this. If you were to remove the first 2 weeks of the season last year, where Kelvin Benjamin had two really good games. Outside of those, we're removing the 2 weeks for everybody. So if, like, let's say the season started in week 3, Kelvin Benjamin would have been the number 39 wide receiver in fantasy, and that's despite seeing 94 targets in that span. He's looked at as a touchdown scorer. He only scored 4 touchdowns over the final 14 games. Devin Funchess over his career has scored 9 touchdowns on 121 targets. Now, granted, he hasn't been the man in town. He's been, you know, it's like 58 and 63 targets is the two seasons how they're split up. My take on this is that Christian McCaffrey and Curtis Samuel are going to eat up a lot of short game work. Like, Samuel is going to be used as a running back sometimes. He's going to be used as a slot receiver. Some people have projected him for the Ted Ginn role. I'm not ready to say that because if you've noticed with Funchess, they spent a second round pick on him and he didn't really see the targets or the snaps until, I mean, you could even argue until this year. He was a part-time player. He was playing behind Philly Brown. He was playing behind Ted Ginn. So for me, I think Christian McCaffrey is splits time carrying the ball with Jonathan Stewart. I think he splits time with Curtis Samuel catching the ball basically as a slot receiver. Kelvin Benjamin is lost in the translation here because Kelvin Benjamin is not really a possession receiver. I wouldn't classify... When I think possession receivers, I think guys that you're going to throw to all the time on third down that you could depend on, that are like their route runners. Like an Amari Cooper is a possession style receiver that can you can trust. Anquan Boldin was that guy. Kelvin Benjamin's not. He's not a deep threat because he's slow and he's big. We all know that. He's caught in this middle where Kelvin Benjamin may not fit in this offense anymore. If you're depending on Kelvin Benjamin, it's because you're looking for 8 to 10 touchdowns. And if you want to make an argument for that, I could see that. But for me, Devin Funchess was a guy that last year, his average depth of target ranked 19th in the NFL among wide receivers with 50 or more targets. But his average reception ranked 7th among them. So he was much better with his targets that he got. His 15.6 yards per reception to this point in his career is not bad for a guy that's 6'4", 232 pounds. So I think Devin Funchess can get it done in the red zone as well. So for me, I'm taking the upside play here, like especially considering their ADP. Like Devin Funchess is free. Kelvin Benjamin's going to cost you maybe a 7th round pick. So my hot take is that Devin Funchess outscores Kelvin Benjamin.
Tags, you aren't going to believe this. I almost made the same exact hot take. You would have been so mad if I would have sniped you. The same exact one.
I'd have been so mad because I've been all over Funchess saying he's a steal in MFL 10s right now. You get him in like the 15th round every time.
You know, I love Curtis Samuel too. I just think Kelvin Benjamin is a do not draft this year.
Scott, where are you at on Funchess?
Yeah, I completely disagree with you guys. I think Kelvin Benjamin's, you know, pretty big risk, low efficiency. He looked really, really fat the last pictures I saw of him. But yeah, I don't think Funchess is particularly good either. And I do think the offense moves in a different direction, but I don't think it has anything to do with their wide receiver who's kind of a tight end who's probably not that good.
Yeah. I mean, it's fair to say that you don't like Funchess. It's more to me to do with I'm looking for someone with upside outside of Kelvin Benjamin right now because I just don't think that Benjamin gets it done.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I don't think Funchess is the guy. If anything, it's maybe Christian McCaffrey getting 20 touches per game and Greg Olsen finishing as a top one or two tight end, or probably top three, assuming Jordan Reed and Gronk stay healthy.
Oh, no Travis Kelce there, huh?
No, he's a guy I'm not too excited about. Maybe I'll save him for my next one, yeah.
I was about to say, let's get into our busts. Let's talk about some hot takes about a bust. Who you got there?
Okay, so yeah, pretty much Travis Kelce is someone who just really disappointed in terms of volume. Greg Olsen was actually the top tight end last season in actual opportunity. Kyle Rudolph outperformed him surprisingly. He was super efficient and he has been super efficient throughout his career. And, you know, I'll give him that, but he's not someone who ever really gets red zone usage. I think Cole Beasley has 3 more goal line targets, 2 more end zone targets, and like 10 more red zone targets over the past 2 seasons. And we noticed with Travis Kelce, it's this thing where he finished as the top scoring tight end. So he's going to get drafted like he's a top scoring tight end. But this was a really low year for fantasy tight end scoring. I'm struggling to pull up the exact numbers, but I think over the past 5, yeah. So Travis Kelce's 13.9 PPR points per game in 2016 would have ranked 7th in 2015. 4th in 2014, 6th in 2013, 5th in 2012, 5th in 2011. And when he's going like not that far off from a Jordan Reed, not that far off from a Rob Gronkowski, I don't think he has any business being there personally. He's just not going to see the volume, even with Jeremy Maclin kind of leaving. And I'd rather draft Greg Olsen. I know that that's kind of a hot take, but Cam Newton just posted one of the least efficient seasons of his career, but the usage was definitely there for Olsen. And I think Cam rebounds a little bit. And like I said, I don't like the wide receivers. So
Kelce here. So here's an interesting fact about Kelce. So I understand what you're saying about him. And I would have said the same thing before seeing what the offense kind of was as the year progressed last year, because the team really changed the way that they did things. They went from a very tight end heavy team. Like he did rank 4th in red zone targets last year, Travis Kelce, but seeing him score the 4 touchdowns, I think that there's some natural progression there in his game. But what I noticed when looking at his game logs, he averaged 8.2 targets over the final 10 games of the season, which which is massively improved because over the first 38 games of his career, he averaged 5.9 targets. So he was entering like almost elite wide receiver territory with over 8 targets per game. The numbers with Macklin, I think Rich Rebar tweeted out something in regards to Travis Kelce's finishes last year when Macklin was out of the lineup. And I think 3 of the 4 games were top 2, and then the other one was like the number 4 tight end. So I'm on the opposite end of Kelce. I think that there's still room to grow. But at the same time, again, trying to figure out how many people from this Kansas City offense can come forward. And I think I'm just more of a Travis Kelce believer than I am like than a Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I like Travis Kelce enough to draft him if he falls to me. But, I think this one kind of makes sense. I don't really like any of the tight ends besides Hunter Henry based on where they're going. And I'm not trying to be funny. I mean, there's a reason I keep talking about Hunter Henry is because I think that he can be a superstar in this league. And I feel like every other tight end, except maybe Gronk, is being overdrafted. But I don't want to make that big of a risk. And Jordan Reed, I don't want to have that big of a risk. He's got all these concussion issues. And then Travis Kelce, I think, is an obvious regression candidate. So I'm just waiting at tight end this year. Kyle Rudolph is going to be there. Jack Doyle.
I like both those guys, but yeah, I'm not drafting. Let me be clear here. I'm not drafting Kelce in the second round or third round. But I mean, talking from a pure projection standpoint, I do like Kyle Rudolph, and I love Jack Doyle's. His value in drafts right now is stupid good. But Bobby, I know we're running low on time here. You want to give us your bust, and then I'll give you mine.
My bust is Jamal Williams, and I know this is really going to make Jake Seeley mad because he's a big believer, but Jamal Williams, I do not have him finishing in the top 70 running backs, and the reason why is I think Aaron Jones is the better running back that Green Bay drafted. I know they drafted Williams higher, but if you look at his spark scores, Aaron Jones is a phenomenal athlete. I think he's going to prove himself during training camp and in the preseason. I think he runs away with his job, and we're drafting him in the top 3 rounds this time next year.
That's crazy. Now, that is a hot take. Now, I don't think necessarily to say that Jamal Williams falls that far, but that Aaron Jones is going to be drafted that high next year. Because, I mean, the metrics guys are all over this. Like, the guys that are talking about the spark rating, I was in another podcast not long ago, and they asked me about it. And, you know, for every guy that breaks out, there's another player like Kyaris Garrett who really didn't. There's another Jeff Janis, you know, like these players that didn't break out. So metrics are like, the spark guys, there's something to it, but it's just like me. You don't want to be the bottom guy in any category. You don't want to.
Have you watched the film on Aaron Jones?
I watched so much rookie stuff this offseason that I came away more impressed than with Jamal Williams, and I know that the Twitter crowd and stuff like that is all over Aaron Jones, but I like Jamal Williams. But the truth of the matter is that Ty Montgomery might fit with this offense does better right now anyway, and that both of them might not be relevant until Ty Montgomery is either demoted or moved or whatever the case is. But
yeah,
Devontae like Mays Jamal
is
Williams.
Pretty impressive too. I mean, they got 3 solid running backs.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that why would they draft both those running backs, right, if they weren't planning on at least using him somewhat? So I'm curious about it, but I stand by what the Packers did. Their scouting obviously said that Jamal Williams was the better player because there was no guarantee that they were going to get Aaron Jones about 100 picks later or whatever it was. My hot take in terms of a bust is that Cam Newton does not finish as a QB1. So he does not finish as a top 12 quarterback. If you look at the 11 games after Cam Newton played with his concussion, in those games, he carried the ball just 61 times for 212 yards, 3 touchdowns. The Panthers have made it clear they do not want him running the ball as much. They started game planning, not having him run the ball as much. Granted, his shoulder was affecting his throwing, but that's not going to change what he was doing from a running standpoint. If you took those numbers over those final 11 games and extrapolated them over a 16-game season, you're looking at 89 carries for 308 yards and 4 touchdowns. To give you a comparison, Blake Bortles and Aaron Rodgers both ran for more yardage last year, and we don't necessarily draft them because they're running quarterbacks. We don't do that. It's just a bonus that comes with them. And Cam Newton is simply not a good enough quarterback to throw the ball to get into that quarterback one territory. I've actually backed this one up with my ranking of him, where it's not outside the top 12, but I actually have him, I think, as my QB 11 right now. I'm just not a big Cam Newton fan, because as he gets older, as these injuries pile up, as they draft 2 running backs, or you could say 1 running back, whatever, as they draft these guys that don't really mix with what Cam Newton's been doing, I have serious, serious concerns about him, and I just don't think he's a good enough passer to overcome these things that are going to go wrong on the other end. So,
I'm with you, Tags. I'm curious where you stand, Scott.
Yeah, I think that's a little bold, but you know, if the rushing production, rushing attempts does decline, then I think there's reason to be concerned for sure. And we see that with the drafting of Curtis Samuel and Christian McCaffrey, that it appears they want him to kind of, you know, instead of maybe using his own legs, just dumping it off to a running back who can gain that extra yardage.
That's basically where I'm at in the whole thing. So, yeah, no, I'm this was fun. This was fun talking about some hot takes. And I know as the season nears, we're going to have more and more, Bobby. I'm excited to share some of those as my projections are finished up and I fine-tune them with all the cuts and things like that. So I'm looking forward to it, man.
We'll have to do one episode where it's just like all hot takes. I mean, if I had my way on the podcast, every episode would be all hot takes.
I like them to a certain extent, but at the same time, we have to sometimes be real in what we're talking about and like what's the most realistic outcome. Like Devin Funchess, it's not very realistic that he outscores Kelvin Benjamin, but I think that that's actually a possibility.
Yeah, there's absolutely a possibility there. I agree. All right, guys. Well, that's all we have for the show today. Really appreciate you guys listening in. Make sure to leave that review and subscribe on iTunes and then send your screenshot to contest@fantasypros.com. to enter the Le'Veon Bell jersey giveaway sweepstakes. Thanks for listening and enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve slowly in a proof of your love. I don't even know how the chemistry works when your rules are kicking in the dirt, kicking in the sand and stirring up trouble.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network.
Available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.